You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.
How's it going, Los Angeles? This is The Startup with Monique Leray. I'm Monique Leray, and welcome to The Startup, another episode. We're getting very close to our 200th episode. And during that time in the pandemic when I was traveling, I knew we could get to 200. In fact, I thought we could get there a little quicker, but we had to do some replays. I'm really glad that we're at, I think this is episode 198. And out of 5 years of being on the show, I've broadcast from many places around the world, in airports, in airport lounges, in my car during the pandemic, a lot at the Starbucks. Never have I broadcast from my boudoir, my bedroom. And the reason is the lighting is changing here at the beach. So I had to move. We're getting some new background stuff for you guys for the 5 years. So stick around for my in-home studio renovation, if you will. But for now, I guess it's about time to bring you here into the bed. But it's all business. And I want to thank our sponsors, everybody that supports this show. Iron Lace Jewelry, thank you so much for your sponsorship and contribution. Thank you to Next Level Global Solutions. Shout out to Vocalaria Studios that does some of our graphics on Instagram. And everybody that just stands by us, Dr. Jess, thank you so much. She's in the holistic healing. She's a real doctor, and she does holistic healing as well. So shout out to you, Dr. Jess, and everybody that, you know, watches the show and supports. 5 years in September, and we're going to have our five-year show. I don't know exactly what we're going to do yet. I do have the guests lined up, but stay tuned for details. But first, let's get started with our first guest, Nate Bloom. Nate, we finally made it happen, and I brought you here. Welcome to The Startup. How are you?
Hey, I knew it was going to happen the way it needed to happen, when it would happen, and here we are.
Here we are.
I'm very excited to be here. Thanks again for everything that you do, and to your listeners for paying attention and being part of it. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for hanging in there as we make things happen. And you know, we're entrepreneurs, so we know how we have to zigzag a little bit, but we
Yeah. Plan for the best, but expect the worst, right?
Every day I get up, Nate. Every day I get up. Oh, wow. Well, I already feel a great energy with you. Why don't we go full screen, Sam? Nate, go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners and viewers and tell us what you're up to.
Well, thank you, Monique. And I'm Nate Bloom. I live in Lincoln, Nebraska, although I actually travel all over the world. I was just last week in South America and Peru and Brazil. And the reason that I travel all over the world is because I run a global startup nonprofit called Sorghum United. And what Sorghum United does is, we'll get into what sorghum and millets are here in a little bit, because I'm pretty sure you don't know. A lot of people don't. But what we do really is we connect people across the world in all points within the value chain for sorghum and millets. So everything from your researchers to your farmers, your seed dealers, processors, all the way down to consumers, investment bankers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we do that for the free exchange of knowledge, as we believe that these grains within regional food systems, because they're very drought tolerant and very healthy, can make a lot of a positive difference in regard to food security at the local and regional level. And then we also publish a series of children's books called The Sorgho Squad, and those represent our markets development aspect of our work, because as I just mentioned, most people do not know what sorghum and millets are. And so we write these books. They're comic book style books, actually. And they focus on these superheroes, these grain superheroes, like an Indiana Jones meets Captain Planet type style. So it's fun, but it's also educational. And we get great reviews with those. And you can find those at sorghosquad.com.
Wow, this is great. Now, I'd like to believe that I know a little bit about a little bit. And, you know, you can get this. Now, are these the seeds that you can get on Whole Foods? Whole Foods and on Amazon?
Yeah, there are some brands, like I think Bob's Red Mill, that sells at Whole Foods and Amazon. The interesting thing for us is that so the U.S. produces the most sorghum in the world, okay? And it happens in places like where I live in the Midwest, the sorghum belt, so to speak. But 93% of what we grow here gets sent to China and sold as cheaply as possible, because it is the best in the world. And then, so that means that a lot of the stuff that you're finding on the grocery store shelves is actually imported from India, which is interesting as well. So we feel like, you know, those kind of value chains we saw during COVID and during conflict chains, or value chains rather, can be stretched and pressed and broken. So we really look at, not that we don't love international trade, we absolutely do. But we also know that there needs to be a component of value addition locally, for not only our value chains here, so that, you know, we can provide locally grown food, but also to provide more economic opportunities for our farmers as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you are in Lincoln, Nebraska. I think you mentioned it before. And that's the heartland, right? I mean, this is people's bread and butter of what they're bringing into trade is, you know, things grown on farms. Speak to that. Is that how you got into this line of work?
Well, actually, I grew up on the farm, but the joke I like to make is that I grow crops as well as I grow a full head of hair.
wow. Achievement. I'm just kidding.
That's actually not true, though. What happened, I grew up on the farm in the 1980s, that was during the farm crisis. And so my cousins and I were all told, go find something else to do. And so I ended up actually graduating from the University of Nebraska here in Lincoln with a degree in psychology, of all things. And I ended up getting a job working for one of our congressmen here in Nebraska. So I spent 5 years working in ag policy for this congressman, and as well as outreach. And then during that time, I decided I want to become more involved in direct farming, but I wasn't going to go back to the farm. And so I ended up getting a job as the Nebraska Grain Sorghum Board director.
Okay.
And so that's a state level agency. So I went from federal to state. And during that time, that's when I really understood, you know, the value of sorghum and millets in regard to health and nutrition, in regard to cropping systems, and what that does for soil health, water conservation, and biodiversity. And then also as a carbon sequestration tool, because these grains have very large root biomasses. So our research shows that it's an excellent crop for carbon sequestration. And I just really understood the bigger picture of how this can help solve a lot of the problems that we're facing worldwide. And it just so happened that we also very organically through social media, no pun intended, we started kind of this international group, started just as a bunch of people who wanted to find ways to work together rather than always competing. It morphed into this, what we now call Sorghum United. And so we've been very involved in the last year and a half. We started January 2023 officially. I quit my job at Nebraska Sorghum, focused on this full time. We've been very involved around the world. We have now an office in Mumbai, another one near Delhi that we've just opened, one in Nairobi. We're opening one in Trinidad and Tobago. We now have a new comms director who's located in New York as well. And we do a ton of work in Rome with the United Nations FAO, and I do speak at conferences all over the world. I just, like I said, in Brazil, I spoke at a conference for women in agriculture. Wow. So it's good work. It's fun, but it's very much like a startup. We don't take money from donors. We don't solicit funds from governments. We try to be as independent and neutral as we can in regard to geopolitics and things like this so that we can serve everybody. And so we continue to develop new funding sources. Right now, the primary one being the books, but we have some others in the works as well. So, wow. Yeah, it's an entrepreneur is a good way to describe it.
It's true. I'm blown away with what you've been able to do. I guess I can liken it to what I've been able to do with my independent films. You know, we've definitely had to get creative of how we've done things, and I like that you are aware of the geopolitical, I guess, how could you not be when you're going to this many different governments and bringing in a super grain? I mean, this thing is the answer to a lot of our problems, everybody. Who knew that grains might heal the world? I should have known this. How come we didn't know?
Well, and the interesting thing is, I call these grains our heritage grains because they were first cultivated in places like Africa and Mesopotamia as the human race spread from these areas to the rest of the planet. And so they're among the first grains ever cultivated. All of our ancestors at some point ate these grains. As a result, by the way, the human gut microbiome has evolved alongside these grains. And there's research from the Food for Health Center here in Nebraska that was published in the journal Nature a couple years ago now, that showed that. That showed that when our when we have sorghum and millets in our diets, that but that gut microbiome is healthier, and thus we're healthier as well. So the thing is, though, we have to be careful because a lot of the problems that we have globally and even here in the U.S. are monoculture cropping systems because we have become so reliant on just a couple of grains. And we like those grains, too. And we think that sorghum has a place with the, on that plate with those grains. Mm-hmm. But we can't trade one monoculture cropping system for another. So that's a something to think about.
That is something to think. Wow. I mean, you say that you have your psychology degree, but I wonder if you have a horticulture degree as well. Or
a lot of experience. That's all.
Great. So why should we care? Okay, it sounds like it's good for the body. Why should we care about this grain for the world and for helping with food security?
Well, first of all, it's drought tolerant. Okay, now so what that means is if you have a front lawn, you'll know what I'm talking about. When you don't get rain or moisture for a while, that grass will turn brown, but it won't die. So when you get more rain, it perks right back up and turns green. So these grains do the same thing. They're largely, there's many varieties. There's about a dozen different varieties of sorghum and millets, which are all small grains, but they're mostly of the poaceae grass family. And so what that means is when you don't get the moisture, the crop will go dormant, but it won't die. And while that will affect your yield, at least you will still have a yield. Now, why is that important? That's important because many parts of the world, the Mediterranean basin in particular, even in Latin America and South America, we're seeing less frequent rains, more heavy rains when they do happen, and hotter temperatures. Yeah. And that is stressing other crops like corn or like rice. And in many places, and I've been to places in Africa where they just simply cannot grow corn anymore. And now they're dependent upon USAID grain that we're growing here because they can't grow their own food. So a lot of these places are actually starting on their own to go back to sorghum and millets. But what I always say is that, we can't ask our farmers to plant a new grain or look at a new solution or a new way of doing things unless they have a value-added market to go to, because it has to be economically sustainable as well. So a big part of what we do is try to create that awareness, create those markets. Another reason we should care as far as the environment goes, I mentioned the carbon sequestration. But that large root biomass also leaves more biology in the soil. Remember that soil is never just dirt, right? And just like we have a little bioeconomy within our guts, we also have one in the soil. And so when we leave more moisture in or more organic material in the soil, that soil does better for the next crop. And then it also uses less water. Sorghum uses about 30% of the water of corn. I think foxtail millet uses about 10% of the water of corn. So there's a lot there. And then lastly, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are very concerned about pollinators as well they should be. And of course, we are too. What we find is that pollinators absolutely love sorghum and millets. And where you see sorghum fields, you will see things like bees and other pollinators. Wow. So again, adding these into rotational systems with other crops is really good for sustainability on the farm. It's good for sustainability around the planet.
You have a little guest there.
Yes, and I asked my daughter to keep Charlie outside, but Charlie is my desk assistant, apparently.
Hello, Charlie. Well, Charlie wants to get in on the good news. Sounds like it's great, coupled, like you said, for pollinators, and we need bees, don't we? Need them for to live.
I mean, listen. Without pollinators, you don't eat. It's that simple. I mean, none of us do. You know.
Very good. Yeah. This is all exciting, and just when you thought you knew, you know, what was out there, you got more information. And I want to speak about your books. So, can you pull those books up again? Yeah, let's look at those.
Yeah.
Tell us about the inspiration again behind these titles and, you know, where can we buy them?
Yeah. Well, first of all, so we've got three chapters. They're a serial, so to speak, just like a comic book would be. And And frankly, there's a couple of reasons we chose the comic book format. And one of them was because we understand that it's, it's the most accessible medium, I think, for most people. It's something cartoonish, bright colors, easy to read, very quick to go through. And it's accessible to young readers, but also something that's, entertaining to older readers as well, right? So that's why we chose that style. And it doesn't hurt that I'm a huge comic book nerd. I've got a sizable collection of Spider-Man actually here at my house.
Okay, Comic-Con just passed, so there you go.
Yep. So we've got there currently are three chapters that are published, but I've actually written the next three already. We're just waiting to get more returns on these books because we just published late last year before we commission the next ones. Okay, but they're very intentional in how they're written. So there are three characters that need to be rediscovered, and these are the members of the Sorgo Squad. Okay. And each one represents a different aspect that the grain provides, as well as boasts a different name that is used for the grains around the world. So in the first chapter, we meet Jowar. Jowar is the common nomenclature for sorghum in India. And we find him actually in the Indus Valley, one of the planet's oldest civilizations, of course. And he represents the industrial applications for sorghum. Because remember, it's not just food, it's also fuel and fiber, just like any other grain.
Yes.
In the second chapter, we meet Mashila, which is the nomenclature used in Ethiopia. And she represents the health and nutrition benefits for humans and animals of the grains. And then in the third book, we meet Milo. Milo is the North American nomenclature that we use here. So a lot of farmers where I live would say Milo instead of sorghum. And he represents the environmental benefits of having sorghum in the farming rotation, et cetera. And then even the name Sorgo, Sorgo is what they call it in Europe and other places. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's spelled with an H, sometimes without an H. So what we wanted to do was we wanted to show people that all of these grains, they are the same thing, even though they have different names. But, again, when you have a grain that's been grown by mankind since almost the beginning of time and it spreads across the world, it's going to have different names wherever you go. And that can be confusing to people. So, it's good. They get a lot of positive reviews. We're starting to put new reviews up on our website now. I am, by the way, looking for a good literary agent. So if you have a listener who's looking for a property, we think we've got something pretty good here.
I actually have someone for you.
That would be great. So we have a lot of demand overseas. We have one of our regional director in Asia is trying to get us into the Indian educational market. The primary schools there teach in English.
Wow.
That would be a huge market just by itself.
That's amazing. Wow. Yeah. You just published last year. So congratulations on getting three out and making them relatable and having a cool, it makes it very relatable the way that you explained it with the names and the regions. And I'm excited for you. This is cool. Now, where can people now? I know you say you don't take donations. So, but outside of buying the book, how can people show their support and in what you're doing? And I think you have a mission you're going on soon, right?
Yeah, well, there's a couple different ways. One, of course, is buy the books. I mean, that's the best way to directly help support the work that we're doing. For in the last 19 months, just for the record, this has been completely self-funded by me. Which we're very blessed to have been able to do that. And it's good that now we're starting to see things come to fruition. Other ways to be involved, at the top of our website at sorghumunited.com, there is a button for the global forum, it says. And what that is it's a global WhatsApp group. And it's, again, stakeholders that are, they may or may not even be directly involved with sorghum and millets. They're just interested in the topic and want to be supportive of it. And it's where our folks primarily share their ideas, their questions, sometimes they promote their companies, all sorts of different things. And the conversations get to be kind of fun. Most of our followers are actually on LinkedIn. So we have a LinkedIn page as well. A lot of them are actually on my personal LinkedIn page. So you're welcome to follow me there. We do have a software startup in Mumbai that eventually, once it gets going, we're hoping to pull all of those people together off of WhatsApp and LinkedIn and Facebook and into one place, but we're not there yet. So those are the primary ways people can be involved and be supportive. But yeah, find us on the socials. We're always doing something. Like I said, just got back from South America. Yeah. Here at the end of the month. Granted, I get visa applications to go through in time. I've got another one coming up for a climate conference in Nigeria. And then we're going to be doing some work in Uganda, some farmer education and farm visits and things like that there, university visits. I talk to a lot of university students. Always glad to do that, too. Okay. If somebody wants me to come and speak to their school, I'm happy to do that. And then from there, I'm going to be spending a week in Hyderabad, India. We're going to sign a couple of MOUs with, I hope, ICRISAT and IIMR, which are two very highly respected research institutes. Wow. And then I'm finishing the trip with an agricultural conference in Thailand before I come home.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. And those sky miles, I tell you, those are miles.
If you need to
on the same airline and don't be crazy like me.
I need to do a better job of keeping track of those. I'll admit I don't. And then I'm home for a couple of weeks, and then October I'm gone again. And it's the other way around, Singapore and India. And then I've got to be in Rome for the World Food Forum. I do sit on an advisory committee, a private sector advisory committee to the Committee on World Food Security. Great. And as part of that, there's an investment forum in Rome. So I'll be at that. And then a stop in, I think, Kenya on the way home. So
nice.
I don't stay home very much.
You're a world traveling entrepreneur with a good thing going. And I love what you're doing. I think the best way my listeners and viewers can support you is, of course, follow you on all of your socials, but also buy the books, everybody. We're right before Halloween, and then before you know it, the holidays. Get these books. These are perfect. You can roll them up, put a little ribbon on them, put them in the stocking, or if you do Hanukkah or Kwanzaa, whatever you do. If you don't do any of those, just give them as gifts. I think it'd be great. So I'm excited to see where these go. And I'm going to link with you. Make sure I have your email or your number. I'm going to link you with a couple literary people while I'm thinking about it.
That would be great. That's much appreciated. You know, in the publishing world, and just a piece of advice for anybody out there who has written their own book, be careful. There are a lot of scams, a lot of people who misrepresent themselves. Once you publish a book, your phone will never not ring. But be careful who you do business with. If you can't look them in the eye and shake their hand and see their office, it's not worth your time.
Okay. Well, that's a really good tip. And, you know, word of mouth and reputation go a long way, and that's helpful too. Now, are you looking to release the next set in the next year, or what's your goal for the next? Not to get too far ahead of you, but
like I said, I've written the next three. And by the way, so I do the writing, but then a local guy here, he's actually teaching now at one of our colleges. His name's Jordan Scribner. He does the illustrations. So what I tell people is that the illustrations are great, but the writing, don't get too excited.
But like I said,
I've written them. I need to see some more sales numbers before I commission, because again, they're self-published, so
yeah,
it's not cheap.
No,
We could have the next three out within the next next 12 months. We could have the next three out because, again, with his teaching schedule, he can't do it full time, obviously. And it does take time for each book. Sure. So, yeah, I mean, and they can continue to go for as long as we have ideas to put into them, quite frankly. There's no shortage of things to talk about when we're talking about food security.
Absolutely. And I want to definitely link with you for the other thing we're talking about offline. But, you know, can the grains, I know that they can, how directly, and this is, you know, I'm throwing a fly ball at you, but how directly can the grains help with energy? You know, because my next documentary is going to be on solar, mm-hmm. In a certain part of the world, helping them. But how can we get the grains to power some things? I know that it can be done.
Yeah, well, there's actually a lot of work being done in that space. Here in the Midwest, where I live, grain sorghum is also used for ethanol production alongside corn. Okay. Here in Nebraska, we grow a ton of corn, so we don't use any sorghum in our ethanol here. But in Kansas and Texas, Oklahoma, places like that, they do. There's a couple different kinds of sorghums, by the way. So first of all, you have a variation of colors within the grain sorghum world. But grain sorghum is typically shorter, about maybe 4 feet high tops, and it's got a large head of grain, and the stalk is negligible, right? But then you have forage sorghums, and forage sorghums are the ones that have a very small grain head at the top, but they might grow to 11 feet tall. And those are the ones that are used kind of like you would sugarcane in making syrups and things like that, which a lot of Americans are familiar with, is sorghum syrup from the South in particular. But there are, in fact, I just visited one of the research facilities in Brazil while I was there at Embrapa, where they're using these forage sorghums for bioenergy. I know there are projects in Africa using these forage sorghums for bioenergy as well.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a few different ways that we can use these grains as energy. And by the way, you know, I know in Europe, in Eastern Europe, in Moldova, there's a company that's also making ethanol with grain sorghum, as a matter of fact. So again, it's nothing new. I mean, it's being done. It's just, we need to do more of it is all.
You do more of it, get out of our comfort zone. And, you know, and Mother Nature will tell you, I mean, in the places where we're having more storms and things like you mentioned, places are drier or wetter, you know, we have to pay attention and really lean in. But people like you are making the difference. And I'm saying this publicly, I don't know if I told everybody, but the third film we've integrated some philanthropy, I think on social media we shared, but I really want to lean in more, but not just philanthropy for people, but for like the earth, you know? So these things excite me. I'm excited to meet you. Finally, we got this done. And I want you to come back and update us, please. However we can help promote what you're doing, your books, give us that link. Are you on Amazon? Are you on the website to order? Did you mention?
We're on Amazon. We're also on Ingram Spark. We're also on, I think, Target.com, BarnesandNoble.com. The easiest way is just to go to our website, sorgosquad.com.
Okay.
That's the easiest way, or Ingram Spark. You know, and one thing, I know we're coming up on time, but one thing, since we're talking about books, that I'd like to challenge your listeners with.
Okay, let's do it.
Because what we're talking about, what we're trying to achieve really is systemic change at the end of the day. It's systemic change in our global food systems and how we look at food as a society. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a great book by a fellow Californian of yours named Jared Diamond, which many of your listeners will be familiar with. My light just went out. Oh, anyway, that book is called Collapse. And in the book Collapse, he compares different societies throughout time and in different places, and how they had to challenge their cultural norms to survive, or if they didn't, did they survive? So case in point, the Easter Islanders, you know, the giant Moai statues, but in order to move them, they had to cut down trees. And eventually they cut down the last tree, and God only knows what was going through their minds when they did that. Wow. Conversely, the Vikings in Greenland, hogs were a big part of their culture, but they found that the soil was too fragile in Greenland and couldn't support hogs. And so they had to change to sheep. And their descendants are still there and doing well, right? So I guess globally, when we think about our food systems and our food norms, which are we going to be? The Easter Islanders or the Greenlanders? And that's what we're trying to challenge here. And sometimes the system doesn't like to be challenged. It doesn't want to change. Wow. And so it's a bit of an uphill battle. We need everyone's help if we're going to make it happen.
I love that. I love that, and that, what you put together there, and something to think about, and find that author. I need to look into them too, to that author as well. And I was just speaking to someone about this on another project. We really have to attach these things that we want to see change in our communities, in our world, to the people we're voting in, places, whatever. Locally and statewide and otherwise, we need to really make sure that your vote is attached to something that you believe in, and they need to mobilize around our vote and our.
It's also voting with your wallet when you go to the grocery store. If you're not seeing these products made with these grains, write a letter to the company, talk to the manager of the grocery store, say these are the things that we want. Large companies that are utilizing right now just about 5 grains worldwide. You know, corn, soybean, rice, wheat, et cetera. You know, they like to make money, right? So if they see that the consumers are asking for something different, they will start offering different things, or else their competitors will, right?
I love that. Yeah, so, let's write a letter. Old school. Why don't we? Yeah. Old school, guys. And if you don't have time, you can just type in what you want into ChatGPT, and it'll formulate a letter for you, and you can read it.
As an author, you're killing me with that.
I know, but you gotta look at it as an assistant. It's an assistant. Anyway, I don't want it. You're an author, and that's fantastic. And Thank you for your time, Nate. Make sure I have your contact. I want to connect you with who I have. Let's have you back and let's connect.
That sounds great. Thank you, Monique. I really appreciate it.
Me too. Best of luck, and I'm excited. All right, guys, that was Nate Bloom, and he's got some cool things going agriculturally. I have my next guest here. I'm just going to adjust my thing. Ben, how's it going?
I'm all right. How are you, Monique?
Hi, dear. Welcome to the startup.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I was just sharing with the last guest. I've done my show around the world in airports and everywhere. And unfortunately, it's landed here in my bed, but lighting.
I like your versatility then.
Thank you. Well, we're working on the home studio, but thank you for joining us. And I know you're up late. You're in London, right?
I am. It's not the worst that it's been for me, I have to say, but yeah, it's pretty late for me here.
Sure. Yes.
Well, why did we get to watch the 100 meters that you guys won in earlier on? That was pretty exciting to see.
Yes. Yes. And you know, I'm going to go full screen now and we're going to have you introduce yourself and tell us what you're up to. Sam, let's go full screen on Ben, please.
Hello, everybody. So my name is Ben Blomley. I'm the COO and co-founder of a company called Mahara. And we are a venture studio and sweat equity investor into startups, as well as a partner to larger businesses looking to build innovative product. I'm really excited to be here with you today, Monique, to talk about what we're doing at Mahara, but also talk about the report that we've done about MBAs and how actually getting an MBA can be something that can give you a bit of a leg up in terms of how to actually achieve and succeed in the startup world. So it's great to be here.
Great. So glad to have you, Ben. I think we might have a little something in common.
Go on.
Tell us where you got your MBA.
This isn't my bedroom, so what else could it be?
Right. We're still keeping it professional, everybody. But yeah. No, they've seen me in cars. They know. It's. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about your MBA and more about the startup and all the things you have going?
Yeah, so I did an MBA at INSEAD, the European Business School. And I'd spent like 8 years in professional life working for EY, a big accountancy firm. I never really thought about doing an MBA. And then I was actually working in India with EY of all places. I spent 2.5 years out there. And I was like trying to find my next move. Mm-hmm. And a few of my friends there was like, why don't you go and do an MBA? Like take some time out and think about things. And at the time, for the interviewer who let me in, I was like, I'm really going to go into banking. Like I've spent my time in professional services working with financial services firms. Yeah. So I think I should probably like stop peering over the fence and go into it properly. Yeah. And when I was there, I went for some interviews and things like that. And the feedback was consistently like, it sounds like you know what you're talking about, but it doesn't seem like you want the job. And I was like, that's because I don't want the job. And then I completely changed direction and I ended up starting a startup that my friend at business school had had the idea for, and I basically took it on with him. Ironically, he went into banking after all anyway, and taking that startup forward and then starting that career switch into a completely different world. The startup was an online gifts marketplace, and it turns out I was pretty uniquely qualified or unqualified for doing what I was doing because I had no idea how to actually build what I was doing, get it sold to people, or get it financed.
Building the plane as you're flying it.
As I always say, like you need to be to build something, to sell it, and finance it. Those are the only three things that exist really in business. And if you don't have skills in any of them, you know, you sort of, as you say, building the plane as you're flying it. Yeah. But what it did do is enable me to meet my now co-founder, Rich. So I had my, original kind of startup idea, I went to an agency who helped me build it. But they, not unsurprisingly, wanted a defined scope in order to be able to say, okay, let's build this thing. Whereas I moved things around, got user feedback and what have you. So ultimately, I fell out with them. And so I had this half-finished code, this half-finished product, and no idea what to do with it. And then I was introduced to this guy who was building an offshore development agency. We just got on really well. We had a few drinks the first time we met. I ended up being his first customer. And then fast forward a few years, my startup failed. Then I joined up with Rich and we launched our new business, Mahara, about 8 years ago, building innovative product for early stage businesses, mainly non-technical founders. And that's where we are now.
Wow. You know, you really mapped out the startup struggle and that point where people ask, okay, what now? You know, what's really, what would get my goat right now? And I love that you were transparent about how you were feeling. And the interviewer really saying, you could do it, but I don't think you want it. And that probably was the biggest gift to you, because here you are now and you look like you're happy, right? I mean, you're cheeky about it, right? Like, so tell us about Bahara and, you know, how can it help some of the startups, listeners and viewers, or even like startup to scale businesses?
Yeah. I mean, our sort of core focus at the center is building innovative products. So early stage software products, and understanding how to build those products. If you do any kind of, I heard you mention ChatGPT with your previous guest, which he was a bit upset about, but it's a great resource to get accelerated on thinking about things. Mm-hmm. But all the research that you'd ever find on ChatGPT about product thinking talks about why a product exists. Mm-hmm. And without a genuine reason for a product to exist, it won't exist for very long. That why a product exists is really important. But we always take a view of, like Simon Sinek, start with why, mm-hmm. but it doesn't end with why. Start with why, and then how, and then what. Mm-hmm. And what we always see with the innovative product that we build, because we particularly focus on non-technical founders, is that people ignore how, because they've got that burning passion about why they exist. And then they say, okay, I want you to build me X. I want you to do Y. And we built over 100 software products, and we're like, we've got a framework for how we do it and the approach that we've got and the kind of prioritizations and decisions that you make. And we're like, no, why are you telling us what to do? Like, you tell us why you exist, and we'll work out how you do it. Hmm. And the comparisons we draw are, if you go to a restaurant and you tell the waiter what you want, and he kind of takes the order and takes it to the kitchen and cooks it for you, mm-hmm. versus if you go and see a doctor and you say, this is my problem I've got, can you help me solve it? Both of those situations are one human providing a service to another human, but they're very different ends of the scale of the value that you're added in the situation. And we prefer to be at that other end of the scale.
Yes. No, great. And, yeah.
And so that flywheel of innovative products is in the middle. And then around it, there are different groups. So customers, basically, customer segments. And the one that we work with a lot is non-technical founders. And the reason for that is that I was a non-technical founder, and I struggled to find a technical co-founder to help me build my business. Does that mean I should never have had the chance? I don't think so. You've got to have a way in somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that serendipity of trying to find somebody who's a technical co-founder or what have you is really hard. And the demands for people with those technical capabilities are just continuing to grow and grow and grow, not just with tech firms, but like everybody needs people who understand technology. So our kind of vision is, every good idea should have a chance to shine. And so how can we help enable that through our business model, our mindset, and our philosophy?
Love it. Love, love, love. Technology, innovation, and AI are here to stay, everybody. So just mm-hmm. take a spoonful of sugar and let the medicine go down, because it's true. And if you want to be here, I kind of liken it to that back in the day, I mean, I'm 46, you write your time card, you submit it, you get a check in 2 weeks. Well, yeah. That's obsolete. And so if you're not leaning into tech and AI, your business will become obsolete. A lot of things will be automated. You need to reach out to Ben and his firm and see how one sector, one niche of your business, at least one piece of your business can become tech savvy and hopefully automated. I mean, it adds value, right? I mean, let's talk about the value add that you guys offer when you're building these things out.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned AI a few times there. Now, that's a really great example of where the value adds can come from, because if you try and build a Gen AI product in a vacuum, it probably won't work, because you've got all the kind of great technology or what have you behind it, but without the business application to apply it to, then actually it's missing half of the point. You know, back to my build, sell, finance model before, like if you build something but you don't know who your customers are or how to get it in there, then it's not really going to work.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a bit of a backlash of that at the moment, whereby actually, you know, the tech sell off recently and what have you, because people are going, oh, this great AI thing, we don't know how to apply it. We don't know the situation to put it into. Whereas a lot of customers we're working with are people who have deep domain expertise, mm-hmm. but they just don't know where to go in order to find the people who can build the products for them. Mm-hmm. And those are the kinds of people that we're looking to activate all the time. You know, one of the things that maybe we'll come on to with the MBA report is this idea that, yeah, lots of startups are started in a garage by somebody somewhere, you know, the Steve Jobs type example and the myth around that.
Right.
But actually, if you have the expertise in the industry or in the sector or the customer base that you've already got, mm-hmm. and you are unsure about how to activate that with technology, and you're sort of a technophobe or unaware of what you need to do, you may miss that chance.
Yeah.
Whereas what we look at is go, okay, how can we find the non-technical founders who bring the customers, who bring the domain expertise, and then accelerate them? And it's not just about the product that we build. It's also about the mindset of understanding what it's like to be a founder. Yeah. And what the kind of stresses and strains that you're under. So, you know, going back to my example about the agency I work with, like saying no, or saying, you know, we have to fix the scope here and what have you, yeah. misunderstands the founder experience. So, you know, bringing that capability as well.
Great. I think for the listeners and viewers, just to clarify, Ben has that fabulous British accent, but also he's spitting knowledge, and some of this might sound foreign to you. So I'll translate in a more basic way. If you have an idea for an app and you're currently doing that business, mom and pop style, and you want to elevate it and put it on the web, and you want to have it be on someone's phone and make it mobile to an app, his firm can help marry what you're already doing practically in your mom and pop and bring it to the digital world, and you can monetize there. It's about using, I mean, you're building with a strong AI, right? You're not doing weak AI builds.
Yeah, I mean, we build AI builds, we build digital products, software products that they don't have AI elements. But, you know, just as an example, sort of closer to home, I was in LA for 6 weeks, about 18 months ago, okay. working with one of the startups that we've spent a lot of time with. And as I've said, you know, that idea about supporting early stage businesses, for some of those businesses, what we actually do is sacrifice the margin on our rates and then take a sweat equity investment in the business.
Wow.
In order to be able to help them, you know, get a longer runway, get more aligned, or demonstrate our alignment with them. And one of those startups was a twice exited founder based in Colorado. But his startup is a healthcare startup. And the reason I was in LA was we were part of the Cedars-Sinai Accelerator Program. So
that's kind of huge. Cedars-Sinai is very huge.
spent time there, and that startup's continued to grow and grow. And it's really great being a part of that business. But that's a prime example of the kinds of things that we can do to accelerate early stage businesses.
Thank you for saying that, because yes, I think, you know, founders need sometimes a little bit of space, and they're bootstrapping with no boots and having, like you said, a little bit more space on the runway. This is a good person to connect with, guys. You got to get with Ben. I'm telling you, don't be afraid of technology. Don't be afraid of AI, because it's not going anywhere. Soon, most jobs that are repetitious or better will be automated. I'm going to make a t-shirt that says that. I've been preaching that. That's what I'm saying. It's true. Don't be afraid of it. Lean in. And if someone's willing to work with you and give sweat equity on the back end, why not do that? You know, even take your little taco stand and you know, put that, make that, you know, put that on online, or, you know, it doesn't have to be full AI. It can be stuff with elements that can help you with more shipping and more product. Even if you're like a coffee business and you want to bag it and you want to sell while you're sleeping. I mean, these are things that Ben's corporation can do, firm can do. And Ben, give us your handles. And when will you be back in the area? Any events or talks coming up?
I'm not sure yet. We have a team in Mexico, so part of our kind of global footprint. So I'm based in London, but we have teams in South Africa, in Thailand, and in Mexico. I hope to get out there later in the year. But for sure, it'd be great to connect with yourself or any of your listeners about any of the ideas that they have, or what have you. Just shoot me a message on LinkedIn or what have you.
Let's get your socials real quick, shall we? We'll do that again.
So I'm, you know, Ben Blomley on LinkedIn. That's the best way to catch me. I can share the link over if that would be helpful.
Okay, great. Yeah, let's do that. I will, or you can just plug it. I don't really have a, we got to get some more, speaking of, we got to get some more tech on here. we're still the startup, keeping it.
Yeah.
You know. But I am going to be in South Africa at the end of the year for the Endemic Project, my third documentary. Yeah. For entrepreneurs, we have to talk through your people offline.
Yeah, you should come out there. Come to the office in Cape Town. We do some local projects, and it'd be great to kind of connect with you and see how we can help or connect you with people over there.
I have some ideas for you already, so let's connect. I'll be sending your people an email. Ben, thank you so much for being on the Startup.
And thank you for having me.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, dear. All right, that's Ben. He was in London, and he's got a tech company. Like, again, just to recap, if you have a startup or you're about to start up, and you are, I got a lot of glare going on today. I'll go to give you a side eye. if you are a business, a mom and pop, or you're going to be a business, and you don't have really a lot of technical experience, technology experience, AI experience, you're going to want to have a digital footprint in the way where you connect with your customers and you service your customers. And don't be afraid of these things. It's the more you know about it, the more exciting it can be. Yes, a lot of jobs will be displaced and changed, but please know there's a space for everyone. But we got to be, you know, we got to think about innovation. We got to be looking at the future. So that's my pitch on that. Guys, next week, we have a cool show. Let's see who we have. We're getting closer and closer to the fifth year. I cannot believe it. Fifth year show coming around. We have a full show next week. So make sure you tune in. It's going to be a variety of topics. I'm very excited. And then after that, 3-4 more shows until our 5-year anniversary show. And I'll have the setup, you know, I always say I'm going to have the setup started up, but I'm always changing things. We'll figure it out. Sam is with me. He knows my style. What will you start up today? Guys, the film's coming out at the end of the month on Roku. Stay tuned for, I'm going to start pushing out ads in the middle of the month at the Pandemic Project documentary on Instagram, Twitter X, Facebook. I don't think we have Facebook. Instagram, Twitter X. Go to YouTube right now. Type in the Pandemic Project documentary. Take a look at our 7-minute and 47-second award-winning trailer, 10 times nominated and award-winning trailer, and see if you like it or not. Drop me a comment. I'll answer. I try to read all of them, and, you know, the likes or the dislikes. We don't have any dislikes yet, so I'm happy about that. I don't think, and I'm not trying to get any. What will you start up today? I will see you next week. Be well, be safe. Ciao.
You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.